everybody. Welcome to the Afterword. I'm Dave Tish. You know, a couple of years ago, I know exactly when it was. It was on September 6th, 2018. A bunch of pastors and I from Westgate went up to another church to hear a hero of mine speak to a room full of pastors and church leaders. There's a guy by the name of Tim Keller. He's one of the most influential pastors in my own life. He is an author and a speaker. And he works out in New York City and has for years. And I know New York City is not the same as the Bay Area, but they're analogous enough that many of the things he talks about what it means to minister in that context, maps easily onto the Bay Area. So just really, really an effective and thoughtful, really appreciate his ministry. So I went up to hear him and I took notes on his talk, and I didn't know it at the time, but I have... notes on your iPhone. I took notes on my iPhone, and I have come back to this note like probably once every 2 months. I reread it because it so dramatically impacted me. Keller was talking about what it means for a church to grow, to be healthy. And I love what he said. He started off, his opening remark was, "The early church didn't grow because of preaching." I love it. He said that to a room full of preachers. "It grew through every Christian sharing the good news. Without a massive movement of every person evangelism, the gospel will not spread. And for it to spread, two things must be present. One, your character as an individual must be different. And two, the character of your community must be different." Keller then went into the ancient world and said, here's how the ancient early church, the early Christians, the first Christians who were receiving the good news of Jesus and then trying to live it out in their little communities. He said, here's five core ways that they lived differently, both as individuals and community, to challenge the dominant Greco-Roman values. Number one, he said, hospitality. This is a word, philoxenia, means love of the stranger, love of the other, as opposed to xenophobia, which is fear of the other. The early church was multi-ethnic. It was open to the other. And for the first time in human history, you could choose a religion. This isn't something you could be born into. You could just choose it. In fact, the only entry requirement to Christianity is this: I would like to be a part of Christianity. That's it. I'd like to be a part of it. That's it. Number two, the second value, generosity. The early church was committed to the poor and to the marginalized. They gave up their stuff and shared. Number three, sympathy. If you know anything about the ancient Roman culture, the Romans were ruthless, using power and violence to snap people in line. And the early Christians, they were sympathetic. They were not ruthless, and they had a principle of non-retaliation, which is not something you see today. Number four, the Imago Dei. The early Christians believed that every single human was stamped with the image of God, and they did not believe in infanticide, the ancient practice where if a baby was born with a defect, or if a baby was born and it wasn't the gender that you wanted, meaning if it was a girl, the ancient folks would go up into the hills and literally leave the baby to die of exposure. The ancient Christians would go and hear the cries of those infants and gather them and raise them. The first orphanages were by Christians who believed every human is stamped with the Imago Dei. And then lastly, he talked about chastity, which we talked about for 5 weeks in our Wonderfully Made series. The Christian sexual ethic, super duper consensual sex. The idea that this was to be done in a covenant, a lifelong covenant of a man and a woman till death do them part. Those are the five core things that Keller talked about: hospitality, generosity, sympathy, the Imago Dei, and chastity. Those are the five core things he said kind of were the individual and collective character of the early church, and how the theology, their lived theology, confronted the ancient Roman culture. But he said there's one more, and this is probably the biggest one. It's adversity. The early Christians handled suffering and pain with hope and joy. Their belief about death somehow changed them, and in a world full of fear and confusion about death, the Christians faced it with a resoluteness, with a confidence, with a hope and a joy that enabled them to minister to their neighbors. And the problem with this, as I was reflecting on this, these are all things that are super challenging. Like, I want to be a person who's hospitable. I want to be a person who's generous, who's non-retaliatory, who believes that everyone has the image of God stamped in them and treats them as such. And then also, you know, chastity, that our sexual ethic would be pure. But the adversity one is not one that I'm interested in growing in, because in order to handle suffering and pain with hope and joy, that means that I'm going to have some you know, pain and suffering. And I don't want that. But in the book of Philippians, Paul says, you know what? We can actually face this with joy. And so we're going to get into that. I've got David Kim here. But in the words of MC Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, joy and pain, sunshine and rain. Yeah, I think that's the first time that Rob Bass has been quoted with the Apostle Paul in the history of Christianity. So I'm pretty proud about that. Anyway, I've got David Kim here in the studio, and we're going to be talking about the book of Philippians in the first chapter, where Paul says that actually suffering and pain can actually be used by God in unexpected ways to bring life, bring kingdom, and even bring maturity to us in ways that we could never even imagine. That it's actually like a gymnasium for the soul, and it has incredible effects on us. Not something we'd want, but because pain and suffering are inevitable in this world, it's a good sign. It's a good thing that God uses it for our benefit and for the glory of Him and for the good of the world. So with that, let's just dive right in. Come on, here we go.
Come on.
Joy.
Bump it up.
Pain.
Come on, here we go.
Sunshine.
What else?
Rain.
Aw, yeah, here we go.
Joy.
Come on, here we go.
Pain.
Bump it up.
Sunshine.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Afterword. Pain. Here with David Kim.
Hey.
It's the two Davids.
Again.
David and David.
Yeah.
Are we the two best Davids on staff?
I think so.
We have to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so this past week, we were talking about Philippians.
Mm.
And you remember?
Yeah.
And this is a series of mini essays or vignettes, the book is, or the letter, I suppose. And each time, Paul is kind of saying a different way to experience the fullness of joy in life. And each lesson is insane. It's just so counterintuitive. And this one is that suffering can actually be a good thing because it can locate us in the story of Jesus because he suffered and it can actually bear incredible fruit. So,
ooh.
Wow.
Fun topic.
But nobody wants this, right? I mean,
yeah.
So talk to me about how you've seen the avoidance of suffering in our modern culture, because Tim, you know who's great on this is Tim Keller. Keller is awesome on this. I listened to like 10 of his sermons. He has a book on suffering.
Yeah.
He's awesome on this.
That book, Walking
with God Through Pain and Suffering.
Totally right. One of the best books.
He's so good. He's
theological,
so good.
But it's not just theology. It's pastoral. It's relational. Yeah. All of that, right?
He's
my goodness.
Off the charts good on this.
Holistic in his approach.
I mean, because he's teaching in a large city, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the questions that people have, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit how you've seen people avoid suffering.
Well, let me say before the people, I would say I primarily avoid suffering by just numbing myself out. And these days I feel like just a lot of YouTube random clips. And I think I do that because it just gets me away from reality. And I'm just watching things that have nothing to do with my life and it won't improve any of my skills. But just the way in which I am using it, sometimes I could say, oh, I'm just watching because it's entertainment. And I'm not saying all forms of entertainment are bad, but I just feel like there are many times where I just want to deal with some of the things that I need to be dealing with. And so I think that's true of our culture. We just numb ourselves through entertainment or food or drugs and whatever, just to just kind of get us away from facing reality.
Yeah, they say you either numb or you run or you succumb.
Yeah.
So it also, I also feel like a lot of people just overwork. Mm. You know, it's like it's so painful. This is too difficult. I'm just going to throw myself into my work.
Yeah. Or let me find control in areas where I have maybe in control in. So by overworking, let me climb something and let me try to accomplish something. Because suffering, you can't, a lot of times suffering, you can't accomplish anything. A lot of times it's suffering, the thing sufferings that happen to you, it's like a lot of times you have to almost surrender and allow God to work in you, and work and busyness of work gives you the illusion that maybe you can make sense of whatever.
Yeah, I also let's zoom back out. One of the things I think is interesting is the first thing that happens when we suffer is I think we ask the question why almost like instinctively, almost immediately. And what's interesting is throughout my life, I've seen two big responses to that. Religious people say, well, you know, you must have done something wrong. God's punishing you if you'd been better, if you'd followed God better. There's like this kind of religious response. But then the other side of it is the secular response is, well, that's just the way the world is. It's broken. Horrible things happen. Death comes to us all. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the jungle, baby. You
know, like suffering's meaningless.
It's all meaning. Yeah. So I guess I kind of like to talk about like why suffering happens. As I enumerated it, tell me if you think that this. I made a list of reasons why suffering happens.
Ooh, love to hear.
Well, it could be completely wrong, or I'd love for you to chime in. One, we do something dumb.
Yes.
I suffer because I did the dumb thing, right?
Yeah. So it's
my fault. You don't study for the test and then you fail, right? Yeah. You can't be like, why, God? It's just, well, you know, that history wasn't going to learn itself. Number two, somebody else makes a choice and hurts me.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's their sin. So mm-hmm. one's my sin, their sin, right? So somebody makes a choice and they hurt me. And this, God's given us free will. And this is just one of the terrible things that we can do with our lives, right? Three, our fallen world. I think about hurricanes and tornadoes. Mm-hmm. There's a new movie coming out called Twisters, which is about tornadoes. And it's really about the fall of man. So, you know, natural disasters, also disease, things like cancer. Mm. You can't really pinpoint anybody's fault. It's not your fault. It's not the doctor's fault. It just is part of what it means to be in a fallen world with death.
Just the chaos.
Death and decay of our world, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Fourth, Satan comes after us and does something. You get a little bit of this in Job. Mm. There's the opening of Job is this. And then so that's what I wanted to talk about that one too also because in the opening of Job, there's like this scene where the Satan, the accuser, comes to God and says, hey, you know, I'd like to go after this guy, Job. And God actually says, well, sure, he allows it, you know, mm-hmm. but then he limits it. Mm-hmm. So he does. It's not God's idea. He doesn't cause any of the suffering directly. It's only indirectly. And then he limits it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also like there's a greater story going on behind that Job never even finds out about. Is there another cause of suffering that I'm missing out on?
It's connected to a little bit of Job, but one thing that I've noticed in my journey is suffering happens when we do good things. So like when we choose to live righteously or when we choose to fight for what is true and good or just, I also feel like suffering comes because of the good choices that we've made. And that's also, maybe you could connect that to maybe Satan and his attack, but I feel like I just want to have its own category that we choose right things, what is good and true in the eyes of God, but then because of that choice, we suffer from it.
Well, it's interesting because it's also Jobian because if you think about it, like
Jobian, yeah.
What Satan comes to God and says, hey, you know, this and that. And God's like, have you considered my servant Job?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then Satan says, well, he doesn't love you. He only loves the stuff you're giving him.
Mm, yeah.
And so God's like, okay, if that's what you think, he's like, if I started to afflict him, he'd curse your name and then he'd die.
Mm.
And so God allows the suffering of Job. He's in complete control in the story. He allows the suffering of Job, but he limits it. And this is critical, he only allows Satan enough rope to hurt Job so that it reverses, it boomerangs.
Yep.
Only enough rope for Satan to hang himself with. Because what happens at the end of the suffering is a deeper relationship with God. And even though Job never finds out throughout the entire book what's actually going on, even now today, we are thousands of years later, we're still talking about Job, right? So that's, I think when we do choose God, there is that's part of the story
part
as well.
Part of the journey. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of my life, I believe that suffering is karma. So
yeah, like, totally.
Yeah, that's just like, I love what you said earlier. Yeah. Just like things that I've done, choices I've made, the person that I am. And because of that, I am suffering. And so grace was such a hard concept for me to even understand, because karma is the way that I understood why I am the way I am.
But in this, right. So talk to me about redemptive suffering, because Paul says in his letter that really neat things are happening because of the suffering. He's not mad about it. He's unplussed by it, nonplussed by it. Mm. For him, suffering is par for the course if you're going to follow Jesus. Jesus came to earth and he suffered. And so if we're going to be humans on this earth, suffering is going to happen to us. Mm. It's just part of what it means for all the reasons that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Sometimes we make decisions. Sometimes other people make decisions. Sometimes it's just the fallen world. Sometimes it's because we have a spiritual enemy. And sometimes it's because God is allowing that enemy to work in such a way for us to have ultimate victory and to learn some, Tim Keller calls it suffering the gymnasium of the soul, which I hate. I hate the idea of suffering being like a gym, getting us stronger in our relationship with God.
Or suffering reveals the truest version of who you really are, and or what you even believe. Because things that you thought you believe about God and yourself, as you suffer, you really are tested to see whether I really believe that about God and myself or not.
Yeah. And then that can allow us the opportunity to change.
Absolutely.
To make different choices.
Yeah.
All right. So I'd love to ask you a question. Talk about a time, if you could, any time in your life where you felt as though something that you went through that was a suffering, something that was painful, actually turned out to be tremendously beneficial for your life and for your relationship with God. Anything. Could be big or small.
Well, I would say earlier days of my journey when I had severe addiction to gambling and video games and pornography, all kind of media related or online related things. I remember just the difficulty of being able to confess it to anyone. And so I hid in that shame, and because of that shame, I suffered tremendously, because I thought those things that would lead to greater joy and freedom actually made me suffer more. The irony of the invitation, right? I'm like, oh, that's going to lead me to freedom and joy, but it didn't. So I hide and I don't confess. And I remember the first time that I had the opportunity to confess to two other colleagues of mine. And this was like early on in like my ministry days, where I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna confess for the first time. I need to figure this out. And I remember confessing, and the grace that was offered, I thought I would be offered with shame and condemnation and judgment and criticism, all the stuff that we kind of believe about what this would do. But the amount of freedom, joy, healing, kindness, grace, safety that was offered, I remember being one of the most transformative experiences in my suffering, receiving something totally different.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, and then God used that to begin to heal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you learn, that's a common thing. So many people say, you know, I got to hide, or if I were to actually say this out loud or tell somebody,
yeah, I will suffer more.
That's the lie.
That's the lie.
Yeah.
And so we hide, and so we suffer more in light of that. But
do you agree with Keller that suffering is the gymnasium of the soul? Or put another way, like our friend John Mark Comer, in his most recent book, talks about suffering as the only mechanism for God to grow us. It's the primary, not the only, the primary mechanism for God to grow us, that suffering, the hard knocks of life, is actually what moves us in the path of discipleship. Do you believe that, or how would you say that?
I do. If you were to say suffering is also maybe the definition of suffering, if we include pain in that, like pain and
yes,
suffering.
Yes, yes, yes.
I think so. Almost all of discipleship, even if you think about spiritual practices of fasting, solitude, silence, scripture reading, giving, generosity, sacrifice, service, and you name it, all the ancient practices of what it means to follow Jesus, all those practices help us become freer and become more like Jesus and to really be united to Christ, all those things, if we're being honest, inflict pain upon us. It causes us pain. We have to sacrifice time, energy, resources, control. And it's all forms of surrender. Any form of surrender, which I believe is all part of discipleship, causes pain at some level. And so I would say, yes, in that journey, to carry up our cross as Jesus would use it, yeah, I would say it's part of what it means to form us into Christ-likeness. Pain is absolutely one of the main kind of rhythms of that process.
Because it allows us, why is pain so important? C.S. Lewis once said that pain is the megaphone that God uses to rouse a deaf world. It's like it somehow amplifies our need for God. Is that what it is? Or is it bring to a head our own fallen concepts of idolatry? Or
well,
what is
any form of surrender is painful because we rather live for ourselves and we rather control all of our destiny, money, finances, power, energy, resources. Right. And so anytime we say, could you share that with anybody, with God and with one another, that requires pain because right. We left to ourselves, we'd rather keep it all for ourselves.
So one of the other things I've been thinking about, I love what you said about pain. I was listening to a Tim Keller sermon. This is how he starts the sermon. I wrote it down because I thought you'd get a kick out of it. He says, if there's one thing that's certain in this life, it's that disease, death, disappointment, and destruction will visit you. Have a good day. It's just like, This is absolutely true, right?
Yeah.
But I love how he put disappointment, because I think disappointment is a form of death. Mm. It means that life is not working out the way that I thought.
Like death of dream?
Death of dreams. Death of disappointment at the way that thing is going, your marriage, your career, that the thing that you hope for, right? Mm-hmm. Because you were hoping. And the reason sometimes that that's such a good thing that disappointment comes is because that dream actually was a bit idolatrous. You thought that that dream, that thing, would give you something that only God can give you. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
and I think
good.
Those are so painful, that you know, those disappointment times. Ugh. When things come crashing down. It's really painful.
Yeah.
But I do think that it allows us to see that thing was mastering me.
Yeah.
And I really thought to my core, if I had that, then I'd really be happy.
Yeah.
Or, God, I've actually kind of been using you.
Yeah.
Because really what I want is that. And if I could have that and not you, I'd take that deal.
Yeah.
And so it's a little Job. I mean, what's Satan's, you know, he you know, you got to give Satan credit. He says, the reason humans like you, God, is because what you give them.
Mm.
They're just networking.
Now that kind of think about it, most of the time that I've been disappointed, I don't do it perfectly, but in my journey with Jesus, it drew me closer to God because I had to go to him. And so, it ends up becoming almost an invitation to be nearer to God in that process. Yeah, for sure.
But it never feels good.
Never feels good. Can I say something?
Yes.
I feel like just kind of a pastoral comment here about people who are suffering. I feel like Christians just do a terrible job empathizing and sitting with people in pain. And so I don't know, maybe this is something that you were going to ask, but I just feel like I just want to talk about it because this is such a thing that bothers me a lot. It triggers me when I'm going through something and somebody just looks at me in the eye and said, don't you know that God's got everything in control? Haven't you read the Bible verse that says XYZ? And like, why don't you have enough faith in God? And while all those statements about God is true, just kind of that whole spiritual bypassing of just like not really recognizing the complexities and the nuances of pain and the emotional stuff that I'm kind of carrying, and just using God language to almost dismiss and override people who are in pain.
Yeah.
I get really bothered by that. And Christians are so good at doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to piggyback on that idea because I think it's so important. I wrote down the words hope and reality. I think sometimes Christians are terrible at living in the actual reality of pain. And then sometimes Christians are horrible at living in the hope of God.
Correct.
So I think that they're tied. I think the first thing is the reality. We all know people who, when something hard's happening, they want to get out of there as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And so they'll minimize, mm-hmm. they'll use minimizing language.
Or they'll use God language, even to quickly, oh, God's gonna figure it out, and just kind of just quickly skip over it.
It reminds me of a moment. I had a mentor, his name was Pastor Sam. He was the president of Youth for Christ International. And when he was younger, he was in Sri Lanka, where he was from, and he was riding with his three-year-old daughter on like a moped scooter. Mm-hmm. Now, I know your girls are a little bit older, but think back to when they were three, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Skylar was three, you know, and they got in a car accident and she was killed. Mm-hmm. Their little daughter, Grace, was killed. And he, at the funeral, somebody said, oh, don't worry, it's just her body. You know, she's with God now.
Yeah.
And I remember him like telling me this story and like shaking. And he's just like, it was the body I held. It was my little girl. So it was a dismissive way. They were trying to bring comfort, but it was so utterly dismissive of the reality of the pain.
Yep.
And I think that sitting in the reality is something that maybe Americans, or maybe it's just, I don't know who, it's us modern folk. Mm-hmm. We're just terrible at it. Why are we so bad at it?
I think it goes back to that kind of, I think we have more options to distract and numb and avoid than ever before. And so I feel like all throughout history, people probably were bad with pain. But I just feel like modern West, we have more options to avoid it. Instead of sitting with it, we can just drive off. We can open our computers or our phones. And so I think now we've been trained, we've been conditioned, and we've been formed. And so now we don't really have to face it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So now let's give some practical help. What are some things that are really helpful to say to not avoid reality, but to actually lean into the pain? Is it something like, what's been helpful to you? The things that people have said that have actually helped.
I love when people go, hey, actually, I don't know if any of these things could be helpful, but here are the three things that I would love to, I would like to offer to you as support, and please let me know if any of them could be helpful. So give me an option, but then you think of the option. So don't say like, I would love to support you. Let me know if you need anything. That's actually not helpful, because now I have to do more work. I'm already suffering. And like, I can't think about what are some of the ways in which you can help me, but it's like, hey, I've done the work because I know you and I know your personality, your things that you enjoy. And so here are the three things that I kind of put as my best kind of three swings, and I would like to just offer pitches to you and
so
see
if you were depressed, something bad happens, I come to you, say, David, okay, I take you out and we can go get
Korean barbecue
or wings, and distract ourselves with the NBA playoffs. I can give you some encouragement. I can sit with you, or I can leave you alone. Which one of those sounds good right now?
Boom.
And depending on where you are, you could say, I just need to be left alone. And that'd be like, that's great. I'm so excited. But you're saying kind of brainstorm some things that might help.
Oh, thanks for giving me, thanks for giving me the opportunity to not think. And like, you gave me some good ideas and now I have options.
One of the things that you do, I think really well, is it's like follow-up questions. So let's say I dump something. I say, man, I'm really having a hard time with this. You usually will say something like, man, that sounds really difficult. Like, how are you dealing with that? Or this is what you say. You say, how's that affecting you? That question, I think, Because sometimes I want to talk about how it's affecting me, but it was hard enough just to tell you what was going on.
Yeah.
I don't even, I almost feel ashamed, or I'm closed off because I don't want to take more of your time.
Right.
Because I feel bad dumping even what I've already dumped. And just when you ask the follow-up question, how's that affecting you? That allows permission for me to share the deeper thought, not just the event, but how it's affecting me.
Mm.
That's been helpful. Is there another phrase or something that you have found that's helpful that opens you up that you appreciate?
Kind of that the third question after that second question, which has to be timed right, because that's why I said let's not do this kind of spiritual bypassing here, but at right times that question, because I can't even think about that, where it's like what God might be inviting you to consider in light of that situation or in light of that
conversation. So, like, where's God in this?
Yeah, where is God in this? Not God is doing this to judge. Not none of that. It's like, what God might be up to, or where is God in this? What God might be stirring in your heart to consider in light of that circumstance, that decision, that situation, that news? Again, I'm not saying that's the first thing you ask, but as followers of Jesus, I really do think sometimes we take our eyes off of God or even the reality of God. And so that's been helpful.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna take your advice, because here's what you've done, and I think you're awesome at this, and I'm trying to get better at it. In the moment, you just listen and ask questions, and then what you almost always do. You and I see each other a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a cheat code. But what you'll do is you'll follow up the next day or a day later, and you'll say this sentence: "I was thinking about you. And I thought about this." And then what you'll do is you'll take something about God and spiritual encouragement, and you'll insert it in.
Mm.
In the moment, I just needed to dump it and get it out and need to be heard, right?
Heard, yeah.
But then the next thing I need, and that's the hope part, I need to be reminded that God's involved, that God's active, and that God's up at work. And so what you do is the next day or later on, you'll say, "I was thinking about your situation. I was thinking about how," and then you'll insert some sort of spiritual advice. And it's always encouraging, because God's with you and he hasn't forgotten about you and he's on the move, is what we need to know anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe that can't happen on the first conversation.
Yeah.
But it has to happen, because we have to encourage each other, right?
Right, because we're following Jesus.
We're following Jesus. Like, yeah. And the temptation and suffering is that God has forgotten about me, or he's not on the move. He's not active.
Right, which leads to hopelessness.
Totally. Yeah. Completely.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's what I think I've seen. And there's others on staff that do that too. I love that phrase. "I was thinking about your situation." Mm. And then there's a reflection that they have. And usually you couch it in, "I was reflecting."
Hmm.
And then sometimes you follow up with some spiritual questions. Like, how have you seen God move? Or does any of this resonate with you? Or how are you processing, these things? Because sometimes I think when suffering hits, I'm not processing how God's involved in this. I'm forgetting that God's even there because my pain is so real.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, again, I feel like you do this really well too. But what I love about a few days later, I was thinking about you, is that that's another lie too, which is not only that God isn't there, God left me alone, but also I'm all alone.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that the friend that I believe is close is actually still thinking about this and praying, or even not even that, like, "Hey buddy, like, thanks for sharing a couple days ago. Today you were in my prayers about that situation." Oh my gosh.
That's a big deal.
Like, are you kidding me?
That is a big deal.
Yeah, that is like, you're with me in this. Like,
yeah, that's a
I'm
big
not
deal.
Alone.
Yeah. That's a big
game
big deal.
Changer.
That's a big deal.
Yeah,
yeah. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I don't think any of us can escape suffering, but I do think that if we have the right posture, God can do incredible things. And, sometimes God just wants to comfort us. Sometimes God wants to change us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes God wants to teach us. Like the other day, I said to my wife, I got some really hard feedback from somebody. It was just hard feedback. And it was true feedback. And I had to apologize. And that felt icky, because I have this lie that runs in my head. I have to be perfect. And if somebody's mad at me or disappointed, it's the end of the world.
Hmm.
But in this community, that's mm-hmm. not true. It's I can make a mistake with God's help. I can, you know, repent and I can say I'm sorry to somebody. They will receive it beautifully. And the person did. They received it very beautifully, incredibly graciousness, and even said, listen, I don't even know how much I think we're all in. Don't let the lie that we're not all in progress. I'm going to be apologizing to you, I'm sure, soon. And I'm like, oh, it was so gracious, right? And then what it did is it removed that lie. I have to be perfect. I can't make a mistake. I can't be a person in motion. I can't be a person for whom God will complete the very good work which he has begun in me, which is the beginning of Philippians, right? And it just was, it's just better. But I'll tell you what, it was painful. So I'm talking about my wife with this, and she's like, it's for your good. And so who doesn't want to learn? Who doesn't want to grow? And I'm like, but it hurts. And she's like, you're a wuss. Which is, you know, one of her spiritual gifts is encouragement with... If both of us were as emotional as I was, our marriage would not work. So so I thought that was also kind of a true statement as well. You know, that suffering really can make us better.
Yeah.
Even if it does hurt, just because it hurts. I mean, I'm grateful for some of the worst times of my life. I look back, I'm so grateful for. And that sounds strange to say, but I wouldn't have known who God is or who I am without them, you know?
Yeah, I think, man, thanks for sharing that. Like, just kind of reflecting back, like, we as humans have so many blind spots. And I feel like suffering opens us to greater realities about God and ourselves if received with open hand. If we do not, then we become bitter and become victims or become, you know, complainers or whatever. But, and I've done that many times, so that's why I can say those definitions. Because we have so many blind spots, suffering really opens us to see God in ourselves more clearly. And that's the, I know while we're in it, it's terrible. So I'm not saying it's not, but there's such a gift in it as well. Yeah.
Well, dude, thanks. We could probably keep talking. I mean, it's a huge topic, Huge topic. So any books you recommend on this? Anything that you've read that is super helpful?
I would say if you are listening and if you're going through it, like, this is why I think Life Group is so beautiful.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you're not even sharing some of the stuff that you're going through in your group. So I would say first and foremost, like, share with your group, ask for prayer. We have pastors, we have a care pastor, we have staff here that would love to hear and just like pray alongside you. We're not saying we're going to fix all of your, that's not it. We want to hear you. We want to walk alongside.
Don't be alone.
Yeah, don't be alone. That's what I would say.
That's good.
More than anything. And but yeah, I would say Keller's book's been really helpful for that journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, cool. David.
Thanks.
Good talking to you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, just want to say thanks to David Kim for stopping by. Join me next week where Jay Kim and I continue on in the book of Philippians, where Paul continues on and he just spoiler alert, he kind of gets political. Yep, political, politics, you know, which is good and non-controversial because hardly anyone has strong opinions about politics these days, right? All right, we'll see you next week.